Abhasota Vikurvana Abhusparsha Gunonilaha Paran Paran Vayat Shabdavanscha Prana Oja Sahobalam. Vayor api bhukurvanat kala karma svabhavata utpadyata tejo vai rupavat sparsha shabdavat tejasastu bhukurvanat asidambo rasatmakam rupavat sparsha vachtambo ghoshavacha paranvayat visheshastu bhukurvanat ambaso ghandavanabhut Paranvayat rasa sparsha shabda rupo gunanvitaha. Word for word, navasa of the sky. Atha, thus. Vikurvanat, being transformed. Abhut, generated. Sparsha, touch. Gunaha, quality. Anilaha, air. Para, previous. Anvayat, by succession. Shabdavan, full of sound. Cha, also. Pranaha, life. Ojaha, sense perception. Saha, fat. Balam, strength. Vayu, of the air. Api, also. Vikurvanat, by transformation. Kala, time. Karma, reaction of the past. Svabhavata, on the basis of nature. Udapadyata, generated. Tejaha, fire. Vai, tuli. Rupavat, with form. Sparsha, touch. Shabdavat, with sound also. Tejasa, of the fire. Tu, but. Vikurvana, on being transformed. Asit, it so happened. Ambaha, water. Rasa Atmakam, composed of juice. Rupavat, with form. Sparshavat, with touch. Sha, hand. Ambaha, water. Ghoshavat, with sound. Cha, and. Para, previous. Anvayat, by succession. Visheshaha, variegatedness. Tu, but, vikurvanat, by transformation, ambasa, of water, gandavan, odorous, abhut, became, para, previous, anvayat, by succession, rasa, juice, sparsha, touch, shabda, sound, rupaguna anvitaha, qualitative. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Because the sky is transformed, the air is generated with the quality of touch. And by previous succession, the air is also full of sound. And the basic principles of duration of life, sense perception, mental power, and bodily strength. When the air is transformed in course of time and nature's course, fire is generated, taking shape with the sense of touch and sound. Since fire is also transformed, there is a manifestation of water, full of juice and taste. As previously, it also has form and touch, and is also full of sound. And water, being transformed from all variegatedness on earth, appears odorous, and as previously becomes qualitatively full of juice, touch, sound, and form respectively. Purport. The whole process of creation is an act of gradual evolution and development from one element to another, reaching up to the variegatedness of the earth as so many trees, plants, mountains, rivers, reptiles, birds, animals, and varieties of human beings. the quality of sense perception is also evolutionary, namely generated from sound, then touch, and from touch to form. Taste and odor are also generated along with the gradual development of sky, air, fire, water, and earth. They are all mutually the cause and effect of one another. But the original cause is the Lord Himself, in plenary version as Mahavishnu lying in the causal water of the Mahatattva. As such, Lord Krishna is described in the Brahma Samhita as the cause of all causes. And this is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita 10.8 as follows. Aham sarvasya bhavaho matta sarvam pravartate iti matva bhajante maam buddha bhava samanvita. The qualities of sense perception are fully represented in the earth, and they are manifested in other elements to a lesser extent. In the sky there is sound only, whereas in the air there are sound and touch. In the fire there are sound, touch and shape, and in the water there is taste also, along with other perceptions, namely sound, touch and shape. In the earth, however, there are all the above mentioned qualities with an extra development of odor also. Therefore, on the earth there is a full display of variegatedness of life, which is originally started with the basic principle of air. Diseases of the body take place due to derangement of air within the earthly body of the living beings. Mental diseases result from special derangement of the air within the body. And as such, yogic exercise is especially beneficial to keep the air in order so that diseases of the body become almost nil by such exercises. When they are properly done, the duration of life also increases, and one can have control over death also by such practices. A perfect yogi can have command over death and quit the body at the right moment, when he is competent to transfer himself to a suitable planet. The bhakti yogi, however, surpasses all the yogis because, by dint of his devotional service, he is promoted to the region beyond the material sky and is placed in one of the planets in the spiritual sky by the supreme will of the Lord, the controller of everything. Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shilakaya Chakshurun Malitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasudevi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Translation: because the sky is transformed, the air is generated to the quality of touch, and by previous succession the air is also full of sound and the basic principles of duration of life, sense perception, mental power, and bodily strength. When the air is transformed in course of time and nature's course, fire is generated, taking shape with the sense of touch and sound. When fire is also transformed, there is a manifestation of water, full of juice and taste. As previously, it also has form and touch, and is also full of sound. And water, being transformed from all variegatedness on earth, appears odorous, and as previously, becomes qualitatively full of juice, touch, sound, and form, respectively. So here the process of creation is being described, that the creation is a gradual evolution. So the Srimad Bhagavatam also describes about the creation. So in our schools and colleges we were also taught about creation, but we were taught about Darwin's theory of evolution, or his theory of creation. And that is only a theory, because that theory has been challenged so many times by devotees and by even scientists themselves. and there is no proof of that theory, and that is based simply on random mutation. So here, Bhagavatam gives its version of the creation, and it might sound very far out if you think about it, but it makes sense, and it is logical, and it is step by step. So as we heard yesterday and throughout the Srimad Bhagavatam, there's a whole description in great detail, but yesterday it was summed up very nicely. So the creation occurs, Mahavishnu glances on the Pradhan. So Mahavishnu is an expansion of Sankarshan, from what I understand. So, and he glances on the Pradhan. So the Pradhan becomes agitated. So within his glance are the jivas and the time factor. And then the three modes come into play. Then comes the Mahatattva, and gradually the false ego is also there. And then when false ego interacts with the modes, goodness, passion and ignorance, they're different effects. So here we see that when false ego comes in touch with the mode of ignorance, it leads to the first element which is generated is the, in the previous verse it's described, sound. So the first layer, the sky, here also it's mentioned, because the sky is transformed, this air is generated. So from the sky, the quality of sound comes. And then the next one is air. And then after air is, what's next here? Fire. Then from fire, water, and then earth. So all these elements are being manifested. And then this, the sense objects are also manifested. And in such a way, the creation gradually expands. And then we see the creation as we see it now. So this might sound very far out, but it makes sense. So Mahavishnu is there, he glances, and then these elements come about, and then he enters within each and every universe, and then he's reclining on the bed, which is Ananta Shesh, and Goddess Lakshmi is massaging him, and then from his navel comes a lotus stem. And there's this lotus flower, and there Brahma is sitting with four heads, and he is the secondary creator. And then he enters within each and every atom also, as Shirodakshaya Vishnu. So this might sound pretty far out, but if you think about the creation, it has puzzled mankind from time immemorial. They haven't been able to come to any conclusive answer. They haven't been able to come to any conclusive solution. And their theories are changing all the time. And they are, in fact, even some prominent devotees, they have pointed so many faults in Darwin's theory of evolution. So we can see that these theories are inconsistent. Whereas the Srimad Bhagavatam and the Vedas, they're always consistent. So they're not changing. Like, you know, version 1.2 or version 5. So the theory, Bhagavatam is eternal and it's absolute, it's not relative knowledge. So it gives the same knowledge in all places, times and circumstances. So this whole creation is being done simply because of our desire to enjoy separately from Krishna. So Krishna has to make this vast arrangement just to satisfy our curiosity to enjoy separately from Him. So because the living entity wants to enjoy separately, then we are put in a place where we can try to enjoy separately from Krishna. So material world is that place where we can try to be the lords of all we survey. So as His Holiness Bhaktivinoda Maharaj has been mentioning that the jiva wants to taste this rasa of lording it over nature. So there is a certain mellow or flavor which one gets by controlling material nature, or by controlling situations, or by controlling people, or controlling something. So even if we cannot control everything, at least we are controlling something. We are the lords of something. Whether it's a small organization or a big organization, or it's just a few people under us, or if it's just our own body. And this tendency is there within everyone. So as I think I gave this example once, we go to this, many devotees go to this doctor, Ganapati Pillai, and he has a receptionist. And you can clearly see this tendency to control and dominate in her. And when you go to her, you just get orders, and you can't move this way, you can't look that way, you can't touch the wall. If you turn around, you're in big trouble. So you can see that she's deriving pleasure by controlling her situation. So though it is very insignificant, but there is some rasa in it. For her, there is some rasa. So one time I went and he said, "No, first you write your name, then I'll talk to you on the list." I said, "Okay." And then he said, "No, you go and sit, then after that I'll talk to you." So I was like, "All right, okay, I have no choice. If I want to be cured, then if I want to see the doctor, so I have to follow her orders. There's no choice." So that's the rasa which the living entity is seeking in the material world. And for that, we have to pay a very heavy price. So the price we are paying is birth, death, old age, and disease, and the threefold miseries, life after life. So this, all this creation is simply done to facilitate our desire. So Krishna doesn't want this, but it is there. And material nature is eternal. So prakriti is of two types. There is para prakriti and apara. So there's the superior nature and there's the inferior nature. So both are eternal. The jiva is eternal, prakriti is eternal, but karma is temporary. So we are placed under the inferior prakriti because of our rebellious desire. So whenever the jiva wants to enjoy, immediately maya grabs the jiva and then we are thrown in the material world. So the material nature, maya functions in two ways. It has the covering potency and the pulling down potency. So millions or billions of people are covered by the material energy. They're fully covered. They don't know who they are, what are they doing, what's the purpose of this world, why are they suffering. And then there's the pulling down potency for those of us who are trying to come out of material nature, who are trying to make spiritual advancement. So then material nature is testing us whether we are really sincere in our attempts to go back to Godhead. Because in the spiritual world, only those jivas who are pure, like Krishna is pure, they can exist in the spiritual world. So that's the thankless service which the material energy is performing, which Durga Devi is performing. That's a thankless task. And it's thankless because and it's mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam also that when Srila Vyasadeva, after he was instructed by Narada Muni, he went on the banks of the Saraswati. He had his cottage over there. He was meditating and then he saw the Supreme Lord. And he saw the Supreme Lord with all of his associates, his servants. And there he saw the material energy also. And she was standing behind the Lord. So she's embarrassed to come in front of the Lord, as we heard also in the last few days, because she's embarrassed by covering the jivas, because she's keeping the jivas away from Krishna, and she has to punish them so much in order to bring them to their senses. Still, we don't come to our senses even after so much punishment. So the jivas, we all are suffering life after life. and we're going through the 8.4 million species, where we're experiencing different types of happiness and distress, and different types of miseries, and then we have to quit that body, get another body. So we all know disease, old age, death, it's very troublesome. So Maya has to do that just to teach us a lesson. And for doing this, she's ashamed of coming in front of the Lord. She's embarrassed. But nonetheless, that's a service, and that's a thankless task. So yes, the material world is created for those who want to enjoy separately from Krishna. And the cause of this creation is the Supreme Lord, as it's being mentioned here. It's Mahavishnu. As also the Bhagavad Gita confirms that. So there's so many causes and effects. Here we see from the sky comes the air, then from the air comes fire, from fire water, and then earth. So all the elements are manifesting in succession, one after the other. So the creation is taking place, gradually. So each element has certain qualities. So the qualities of air which are mentioned are sense perception, mental power, and bodily strength. And as Prabhupada mentioned in the purport, that if someone's life air is disturbed, they will have bodily diseases. Prabhupada mentions that in the purport. So the quality of air affects the bodily strength, mental power, and sense perception. So depending on how much the air, life air is agitated within the body, will have certain diseases. So Ayurveda elaborates on all this. And this is kind of unknown to modern medical science. So they are more or less concerned with the gross workings of the body. So modern medical treatment just deals with your physical anatomy. And very less, they talk about the mind, but they don't have so much idea and intelligence, and the life is, they don't know much at all, hardly anything. But these ancient medical practices like Chinese medicine, or especially Ayurveda, they have a great deal of understanding of the life air. So if there are different kinds of life airs within the body, and they are responsible for different functions of the body. So there's even this whole description given in the third canto from memory about the different life airs, how they are responsible for certain functions within the body. So when we, whether passing air or excreting, or burping, or even closing your eyelids, yawning, there's different life airs which are responsible for that. So as Prabhupada mentioned, if someone's life air is very disturbed, some even mental illnesses are related to the disturbance of the life air. So if someone knows pranayama, they know what they're doing, they can cure their mental illness or the different bodily illnesses they're experiencing. But that requires an expert physician. And in this day and age, that's very few of them around. I was reading one time that someone was doing pranayama and they had a nervous breakdown because they did too much, or they did too hard. So these things have to be done under guidance, so one doesn't break one's body. So the yogis, as Prabhupada mentioned in the purport, the yogis also control the life air. So the yogis control the life air to make further advancement. It depends on the motivation of the yogi. Sometimes the yogis get carried away, and some yogis do it for good health or to show off to others. But the real purpose of yoga is to achieve liberation from the cycle of birth and death. So even if now, if we go to Kumbh Mela, you might come across a few yogis. You might come across some yogis who are expert in controlling the life airs. And by doing that, they can prolong the span of their life. So some yogis, and Prabhupada also mentioned one time, he was in Kumbh Mela, and he was with his disciples, and they went for a bath in the confluence. And there they saw these young boys pop out of the water. And they told Prabhupada. Prabhupada said that these are actually yogis. They are a few hundred years old. And they have come from the Himalayas. They take a dip in the Himalayas, in the Ganges or wherever, and they come out in Prayag. So by yogic power, they can do that. And they can prolong their life for a very long span. And this is simply done by just controlling the life air. Because our life is... I've heard Prabhupada say that the number of breaths we take is that much is our life. That's all already kind of worked out. So the yogis, they can control their breath, so the life here, and then they can increase the span of life. So then they quit the body when they want to quit. So someone who's very advanced in yoga, they have the ability to quit the body when they want to quit. So we see the example of Bhishma Dev. Bhishma Dev had the ability to quit the body when he wanted to. Though he was pierced by so many arrows and he was lying on a bed of arrows under excruciating pain. But still he could quit the body when he wanted to. And that's by the power of yoga. So when the sun was in the right position and he really wanted to quit when Krishna was there in front of him. Because Bhishma is a bhakti yogi. But we see yogis have that ability to do that. So then it depends on what their motivation is. So if their motivation is to be a devotee, they can go back to Godhead. But generally they get carried away by the siddhis and the yogic powers which come about. So they get distracted. Or they can even go to other planets in this universe and enjoy over there. So all this science is lost, and yoga today is simply known as physical exercises, asanas at the most, or pranayama at the most. That's about it. So the real knowledge of yoga is lacking. So from air is transformed into fire. So fire has the quality of touch. Touch and sound, Srila Prabhupada says here. When air is transformed in course of time and nature's course, fire is generated, taking shape with the sense of touch and sound. So sound is there in air or the sky. So then the quality of shape comes. With fire there's a form. So there's a shape, there's a form which comes. And then next comes water. So water has the quality of taste or juice. And then earth has all the qualities. So this says sarva kama duga mahi, that from earth one can derive all kinds of pleasures, because within earth everything is contained. So all the qualities of the previous elements are all there within the earth. Therefore one can derive the maximum enjoyment from the earth. And we see from the earth so many things are produced. So many consumer items, products are produced, all from the earth. So the earth is very special in that sense. But everything we are enjoying in this material world is more or less in the mode of ignorance, because this is false ego in contact with the mode of ignorance leads to the production of these six or these five great elements and their different sense objects. So whatever people are enjoying is actually in the advancement of civilization is in the mode of ignorance, because the very basis is ignorance. Whereas mind and the demigods are in the mode are false ego in the mode of goodness, are the products of false ego in the mode of goodness. And we heard how intelligence is false ego coming in contact with the mode of passion. So we see today's pleasures are more or less based on gross sense enjoyment. We see the pleasures people want to experience today and are experiencing are based on false ego in the mode of in contact with ignorance, because it's all gross. Whereas before, the pleasures were more or less subtle, you know, intellectual or mental. So we can see how Kali Yuga is progressing and Kali Yuga is degrading. And Kali Yuga is a very dark age. It's the age of ignorance. And Prabhupada summed it up in a few purports before when Gangesha Guru was giving his class. He said it's the industrial, he said something along the lines of advancement of industry. And so that's false ego coming in contact with the mode of ignorance. So today's society is filled with consumer products, and that's all ignorance, basically. But as devotees, we can dovetail anything in Krishna's service, as Rupa Goswami mentions, that Krishna is the proprietor of everything. And if we dovetail Krishna's energy in his service, it becomes transformed into spiritual. So Prabhupada was very expert at this. Prabhupada was expert in the principle of Yukta Vairagya. So Prabhupada was using everything in Krishna's service. Prabhupada did not spare anything. Prabhupada was very ahead of his times. And even Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he was very ahead of his times. And in fact, he was criticized. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was traveling in a motor car. Or sometimes he would wear like a kind of overcoat or a suit. And in that way he was criticized, because a sadhu is not meant to, you know, go around in a car. And Srila Prabhupada was riding in jet planes, and he was flying all over the world. And Prabhupada didn't spare any technology. At the time, he was using tape recorders, which was rare, it was expensive. And he was using microphones, and they were using video cameras, and the printer, they were using the printer. So though all these things are in the mode of ignorance, but if they are connected to Krishna's service, they become transcendental. Because a devotee sees that the proprietor of everything is Krishna. A devotee understands that. Krishna is the proprietor. Isha vasyam idam sarvam yat kincha jagatayam jagat. So Krishna is the owner and controller of everything. Everything belongs to Krishna. So if we use what belongs to Krishna in his service, automatically it becomes spiritual, and it doesn't bind us to this world. And Prabhupada was excuse me, expert in Yukta Vairagya. So that's a fine line. We can do that, but we have to be careful. We have to understand that everything belongs to Krishna, and we use what's required in his service, not that what we want. And then we say yukta vairagya. It's a fine line. So because we want a certain thing, then we say, oh, yukta vairagya, you know, this is in Krishna's service. But our dovetailing everything in relationship to Krishna has to be done under the guidance of our spiritual master. That's how we dovetail everything in Krishna's service. So if there was Facebook back then, you know, Prabhupada would have used it to broadcast Krishna's glories. So Prabhupada used whatever was there. So here in the last sentence, Srila Prabhupada mentions in his purport that the bhakti yogi, however, surpasses all the yogis because by dint of his devotional service, he is promoted to the region beyond the material sky and is placed in one of the planets in the spiritual sky by the supreme will of the Lord, the controller of everything. So in other words, as devotees or as bhakti yogis, we do not have to engage in the other processes of yoga. So we don't have to drill our life breath, we don't have to press our nose on the floor and do, you know, very austere yoga. We have to engage in Krishna's service. And then by His mercy, when He thinks we are fit to go back to Godhead, He takes us back to Godhead. And as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Yoginam api sarvesham madgaten antaratmana bhajate yo maam, what is it? Shraddhavan yo bhajate maam same yuktatama madaha. So Krishna says, of all the yogis, the one who always thinks of me, the one who abides in me with great faith, rendering service unto me, he is the highest of all. So Krishna gives his opinion. In the sixth chapter, Krishna describes all the different yogis. And before that, he describes the karma yogi, the jnana yogi, and he describes the mystic yogi. And then after all that, he says, the best one is he who is always thinking of me, who is always abiding in me with great faith. So one who has firm faith in Krishna and the spiritual master, unto him are all the imports of the Vedic knowledge revealed. So Krishna consciousness is all about how much faith we have in the Supreme Lord, how much faith we have in the process of devotional service, about being in the association of devotees. That's how one's advancement is measured, not by externalities, what kind of Brahman thread we are wearing, or what's the color of a cloth, or how long we've been around. So but our advancement is in how much faith we have in Krishna, that how much we are depending on Krishna rather than depending on our own abilities. And if we have the full faith that Krishna will protect us, He will maintain us under all circumstances. And if I give my one life to Krishna, if I dedicate this life fully to Krishna, I have nothing to lose and I have everything to gain. So someone who has this firm faith, that person is very advanced. And that person, Krishna says, he is very dear to me. In fact, he's even more dear than the Lord Himself. So that person is very dear to Krishna, more than Himself. And to such a devotee, liberation is their rightful claim. In fact, liberation is standing at the doorstep with folded hands. So for a devotee who has firm faith in the Lord, who always abides in the Lord, they don't need to worry about their liberation or, you know, where they'll be going in the next life or how they'll be quitting their body. So all they're concerned is about their service to the Lord. So all they want is the service, and they're concerned about what service they'll be doing in the next lifetime if they have the association of devotees. So devotees do not pray for liberation. They do not aspire for liberation. In fact, desiring liberation is also a material desire, because one wants to be one with the Lord. Or one could even desire one of the five types of liberation. But that's not as advanced as someone who doesn't desire any liberation at all. So we see the prayers of various devotees in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Even like with Dhruva Maharaj, when he was offered what he wanted and when he got darshan of the Lord, he said, I don't want anything else. All I want is your devotional service. We see Prahlad Maharaj, Uddhava. And Uddhava said that he simply wants to be the blade of grass in Vrindavan. So the gopis walk over him and he gets their mercy. So we see devotees don't desire their own liberation or their sense enjoyment or gratification or what, you know, their material situation. They're simply asking the Lord for service in the association of devotees. That's what the main prayer of the devotee is. That whether in my next lifetime, wherever I will be, I should be in the association of devotees. Even if I'm an ant or a blade of grass. So that's the desire of a devotee. So when one has such a pure desire, then Krishna looks after everything. So we, as devotees, we don't need to worry about that. So we have a very good insurance policy. So our insurance policy is, there's nothing like this in the material world. So where you do your service and then everything else is taken care of. So one who dedicates his life like this fully, then Krishna takes such a soul, jiva, back to Godhead. Or even if they do come back, they come back for service. They come back for more service, for spreading the Lord's glory. So Srila Prabhupada said that, one time he told Bhavananda, that after he was being pushed, he said, I've actually come down to the material world to spread the Krishna Vanas movement, to write these books, and to spread the Sankirtan movement of the Lord. So he didn't want to come, but Krishna said, okay, you go there, I will arrange everything. And so Srila Prabhupada is a Nitya Siddha. But because we have been here for a long time, it seems we are here from time immemorial. And it seems that we have been here eternally. So we are called Nitya Baddha. Our bondage seems to be eternal, but it's not. Because karma is temporary. But Prakriti is eternal, but karma is temporary. So we can break that by engaging in devotional service under the guidance of the authorities, under the guidance of the acharyas, our spiritual masters, and senior Vaishnavas. So I'll leave it there. Are there any questions or comments? Well, that's the beginning. So, of course, devotees don't want liberation and not any service. So, devotees wanting, if we want, there's five kinds of liberations, and one of them is more or less being passive, you know, shanta, rasa. But devotees desire liberation in which one can render service. Of course, that's not the highest, but it's a very good start. So then, as that desire becomes purified, one won't even ask for liberation. So, going to the spiritual world and rendering service, that's because by nature we are servants and we have to render service. So to ask for the Lord's service in the spiritual world, that's a pretty good start. One should not artificially try to come to the stage of, you know, I have no desires and I just want... I don't want anything. But in reality, we want so many things. And Krishna tests us in so many ways by, you know, giving us a nice job or, you know, facilities. We get tempted in this world also. So we can really see that we are not at that level yet. In fact, we might not even desire to go to the spiritual world. We might just get carried away with what's being offered in the material world. But that's not a bad aspiration to have. And that will get purified as we render devotional service. Yes.
On the topic, you were saying how Srila Prabhupada told Bhavananda Prabhu that, I've read that passage as well, that he was sent by Krishna to distribute books. So how would you reconcile also that Srila Prabhupada told Rivasananda Prabhu that it took him 30 years at least to perfect his devotional service, and also that in his past life his astrologer told him that he was a physician? How do you reconcile that with Srila Prabhupada being an
Nityananda? Oh, so Prabhupada told Revakinandan it took him 30 years to perfect.
Yeah.
Well, if we look at Prabhupada's history, he was part of the Gandhi movement. So one could say he's in total ignorance, because the Gandhian movement was simply based on the bodily conception. It was about getting India freedom, and there was nothing spiritual in that. But actually, Prabhupada is a Nitya Siddha, and that's just his Leela. It's just, you know, kind of by the Lord's arrangement, covered over, you could say, like Arjuna was. But that's just his Leela. But other times, Prabhupada also says, never was there a time when I forgot Krishna. And Prabhupada says that also. So we can actually, if we put everything together, we can understand that he's a Nitya Siddha devotee. And this just is, that's how the Lord wanted it to be. That's what I would say. Anything else? Okay, time's up. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam.